All right. My name is Justin, and I'm an addict. And thanks to my God, the steps, and the fellowship of other addicts, I am sober one day at a time since June 19th, 2015. And for that, I am beyond grateful. Welcome to the RICO 12 speaker meeting. We are an organization whose addictions include alcohol, drugs, lust and sex, food and gambling, codependency, just to name a few. We come together from all places, faiths, and backgrounds to learn the similarities of addiction and to gain tools of hope, tools and hope from others who are walking a similar path. We invite recovering addicts with at least 1 year sobriety and who are actively working their recovery in their respective fellowships to share their experience, strength, and hope on a live Zoom meeting each Friday at noon Central Time for 20 to 25 minutes. Then we, the audience, get the opportunity to ask questions of that speaker for another 20 to 25 minutes. Now, for those of you who are here live, in order to ask questions, please type them in the Q&A link at the bottom of your Zoom window. If you're hearing this podcast recorded and would like to participate as a live audience member in the future, or if you'd like to be a guest speaker in a future meeting, please go to RICO12.com, that's RECO12.com, to learn more and submit your email address there to receive weekly invitations or to submit to become a guest speaker. RICO 12 is a self-supporting project, and we appreciate your help in keeping it that way. We gratefully accept contributions to help cover the costs of the Zoom platform, podcast platform, web hosting, and administrative costs. To contribute, you can go to www.rico12.com/support, or you can click the link to PayPal in the chat that I put in there a little bit earlier in the, of the live meeting, or you can use Venmo. If you use Venmo, you can contribute there. Our handle there is at RICO-12, spelled out T-W-E-L-V-E. When you contribute, please specify the meeting number. This is meeting number 13. Last week's meeting with Kevin H., an Essanon who spoke on emotional sobriety, was awesome. If you missed hearing that one or any other meetings we've done, you can listen to them in podcast form by searching for RICO 12 Speaker Meeting Podcast on virtually any podcast platform that you use. Or you can go to the RICO 12 website and find it under the link podcast. I would like to read a recent review we received on Apple Podcasts. This is from Pianoman232. He says, quote, powerful stories of people. We are all human and we all have stories to tell. I feel connected to something bigger than myself when I listen to these speakers. I am so grateful for the opportunity to hear someone share genuinely and vulnerably about their experience in overcoming addictive behaviors and the transformation that results through living the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. Just what I needed. Thanks, Pianoman232. That is just what we needed. If you, like Pianoman232, find the RICO 12 Speaker Meeting Podcast of value, we would be so grateful to get your rating and review on the podcast platform on which you have subscribed to this podcast. Your reviews and ratings will help us get this message to even more addicts who suffer. Now, let's introduce our guest speaker for today, Sarah B. Sarah identifies as a blackout codependent. She has been a member of Codependents Anonymous for almost 5 years. Sarah spent 18 months in the rooms of CODA, attending meetings weekly. Although learning a lot about the disease of codependency, sponsorship was not a part of her meetings. Eventually, Sarah helped start a step group study within the fellowship so that members could work the steps in recovery. This still continues today. However, after yet another bottom and yet another failed relationship, Sarah needed more help than simply going to meetings. Even the CODA step study was insufficient to provide Sarah with the help she desperately needed. 2.5 years ago, by the grace of God, she found a sponsor in the rooms of SLAA who believed in the undiluted message of the big books of Alcoholics Anonymous. 3 months later, Sarah was rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence. I love that. She went from being suicidal, anxiety-ridden, and hopeless to being happy, joyous, and free. Since then, Sarah has been on a mission to sponsor members of CODA and to share the big book message with those who still suffer. In March 2020, Sarah started the Spiritual Solution Group of Codependents Anonymous on Monday nights at 8 p.m. This is a women's group whose primary purpose is to connect untreated codependents to recovered codependents who can guide the newcomer through a personalized study of the big book of AA. Sarah, the floor is now yours. Take it away.
Wow, thank you so much for that introduction. And I am just so thrilled and excited to be here and share my experience, my journey in the rooms with codependency and with the Big Book and sponsorship with our listeners today. And I love that song that plays at the beginning of this podcast. It's so awesome. I was just thinking, like, the guy part and the woman part and standing still and God. It really just, it was great. I loved it. So thank you, Justin. I thought that a good way for me to start today would be to actually define codependency, because it's kind of a hard topic to understand. And even for myself, after years of being in the program, I was like, I still don't even really know what this is. It's so broad and vague. But I thought, you know, especially for our new friends, providing some definitions might be helpful. So the first one comes from the CODA.org website. It's from the CODA Welcome. And it says that codependency is a deeply rooted compulsive behavior born out of our sometimes moderately, sometimes extremely dysfunctional families. We attempted to use others as our sole source of identity, value, and well-being. And that basically sums up the problem for me. Using other people as my sole source of identity, value, and well-being, using others as my source of security and safety. So I'll talk more about that in a minute, but I also wanted to provide a couple other definitions. So it also is defined as a person belonging to a dysfunctional one-sided relationship where one person relies on the other for meeting nearly all their emotional needs. And then another definition is codependence is an imbalanced relationship where one partner assumes the giver-rescuer role and the other assumes the taker-victim role. And so we can see here that engaging in relationships with people from a codependent place is not healthy. It doesn't make for healthy, loving relationships. And, you know, in my case, it made my life completely and utterly unmanageable. And it was through working the steps in both, you know, CODA and through the Big Book, I attribute my recovery to both, that I now live happy, joyous, and free one day at a time through the power of God. So I'll just share a little bit about, you know, my, you know, brand of crazy, if you will, because everybody with codependency is a little bit different and it manifests in different ways. There's a really great resource on the CODA.org website that talks about the patterns and characteristics of codependency. And so that's usually where I start off with my sponsees is I send them that resource and I ask them, you know, highlight or circle the things that apply to you. And that way we can start identifying what you're powerless over and what you really need help with. So in my case, my codependency started at a very young age. I seriously can't remember a time when I wasn't codependent. And, you know, I'll talk a little bit more about the spiritual malady. But basically, you know, from the age of four onwards, I just never felt right inside. I just always felt this sense of worthlessness, fear, shame, anxiety. I never felt like I fit in. You know, I looked at everybody on the outside. They all seemed to be going at life so easily. And I just always seemed to struggle and just not fit in. And so my solution to that, you know, that internal unmanageability was to seek comfort and ease in other people accepting and loving me. And, you know, that's really what started to, that's really where it started. And I became a people pleaser. So I became whoever you wanted me to be. I said whatever you wanted me to say. I dressed how you wanted me to dress, did what you wanted me to do. And if you were, you know, polar opposites, I would mold to whoever you needed me to be so that you would accept me, because my entire worth and identity, came from you. It came from another person. And you can see how that's complete dependency and how I was completely enslaved to another person. And I bought into the lie that I could control others to get what I thought I needed from them. But the reality is I don't have control over others. And, you know, living according to that lie that I, you know, trying to control people is what made me sick and made me sicker and sicker and sicker. So that basically describes my problem. And, you know, I have some notes that I wrote here just to guide me. I wrote, I would go to any lengths to get what I needed from you. Manipulation, control, people pleasing, like I said, to get what I thought I needed, but it was never enough. I constantly needed more from you. Or even if you told me that you loved me and that you wouldn't leave me, I might believe it for a second and get, you know, a little bit of ease, but then that internal condition came back and I needed that reassurance again and again and again. So as I got older, you know, into my teens and early 20s, I'm in my late 20s now, the disease progressed for me. It definitely got worse. And I remember, you know, I lived a very sheltered life. I come from an affluent family of doctors and PhDs. Everything on the outside in my life looked great. Never had a shortage of money. You know, I was talking to my sponsor and she's like, you have everything. You have everything. People would look at you and think, why does she have any problems? And that proves that addiction, codependency, doesn't matter, you know, where you come from, what you look like, what your background is, how much money you have, what, you know, none of that matters. You know, it's an internal issue. And I remember I moved out of my parents' place for the first time to university, and my spiritual malady, the root of my issue, this internal feeling of, I don't know how to live. I don't feel right inside. I'm terrified. Just got so bad that I was calling my dad like 7 times a day just to get help. Like it was crazy. And, you know, the depth of the powerlessness over this goes so far, like my disease would take over unconsciously as well, because you know, my parents were, my dad especially, he wasn't very nurturing, but he's a doctor. And so when I got sick, he would take care of me and give me attention. And I noticed that subconsciously my own body was making me ill so that I could get attention and care from other people, you know, and that's how my disease controlled people, was through these, you know, crazy ways, even to the point where I would make myself sick. And so, you know, when the big book says we, you know, this progresses to insanity or death, that is 100% true in my case. And I was dying and I was getting worse. And then I remember finally I got into therapy, which it did provide me with some relief, but then not enough. And I would look for a new therapist or look for a new self-help book, look for a new guru. It was just constantly looking to different people, always going to people. People were my gods. People were my higher power. And it wasn't until, you know, after a couple years in CODA and some other fellowships and I had another bottom, I was like, what is going on? You know, nothing is working here. Nothing is working. That I was fortunate to meet someone who was armed with the facts, of, you know, the undiluted message of the big book, the original founders of our program, who understood, you know, the nature of our disease and how hopeless those of us who are in that category are, you know. And I didn't know that. I didn't even know that codependency was an addiction, but I now identify as an addict. And I get a lot of questions about what does it mean to be blackout, like a blackout codependent. And I share with people, you know, I'm not just a little bit codependent or moderately or severely, like I am the hopeless variety. And the cool thing is this book here, you know, the big book, I have it right here, was written for people who are hopeless. It was written for people who literally had to be locked up because they were so insane, because they couldn't trust their mind, their actions, their lives were completely out of control. And so that was me. And I didn't take a single drink or drug. I went insane just through my own thinking. You know, my internal state that was getting worse and worse was what was making me insane. And I learned that because I was beyond human aid, that my only solution lay in a relationship with a power greater than myself. So in step one, you know, going through all of this, I had to really admit that I'm an addict of the hopeless variety, and that I have no power or control over this thing inside of me that basically is leading me to death. So I had to learn that this disease, basically without a solution, is a death sentence. I never learned that in the rooms of CODA, right? It's not an easy thing to hear. And our book says that it's not easy to, shoot, my earbud fell out. One second. Oh, just getting a little excited there. It's not an easy thing, you know, to admit that I'm different from my fellows, that I'm different, that I have a brain that works differently than the average normal brain as a result of this, and therefore that I have to live differently. And I need a radical solution to this radical problem, you know, and the radical solution wasn't for me in going deeper into understanding codependency, although I did get a lot of value in learning what it was, you know, doing the readings and whatnot. But the solution lay in connecting to God, because that's the only thing that was going to set me free, was that relationship. And like I said, the solution is radical because the problem is radical, and the solution is destruction of self-centeredness. That is my solution, is I have to be willing to completely abandon myself so that a higher power that I desperately need can come into my life. And the funny thing is I abandoned myself my entire life to people, you know, because I made people my gods. And I hear a lot, like in therapy, for example, oh, you don't want to abandon yourself anymore. Well, I do need to abandon myself because Sarah is my problem. But instead of abandoning myself to people, you know, and my books and my own intellect, I need to abandon myself to God. And in that process, in step three, it says we are reborn. And that was 100% what happened to me. I am not the same person anymore. When I live, you know, spiritually fit, I walk free because I make God, you know, the most important thing in my life. And one thing that I also learned through the process of the big book is in being reborn, that implies that I had to go through a death. A death needed to take place. And death is scary. It's painful. It's excruciating at times. The death is really withdrawal. So, you know, when we say we have to go through withdrawal, it's that addict part of me, which is completely running the show and dominating my life, literally needs to die, or, you know, so that God can come in. And I remember, you know, those excruciating moments where I felt so hopeless, when I was going through withdrawal and not reaching out to people, not acting out, but, you know, being asked to go to this thing out there, which I can't see, touch, smell, and being told that's what was going to save me. Man, like, I mean, the only way that I could really embrace that idea was realizing that nothing else was going to work and I was going to die either way. And I just remember in those moments of despair, reaching for God and asking for his help, that's when the process of rebirth started to take place in me. So those are the main points that I wanted to share. I'll share a little bit about, you know, what my sponsor told me at the beginning, you know, things that helped me a lot in the beginning when I was going through my spiritual death, my withdrawal process, and the process of being reborn to this new creation that I am, living for God. The first thing that she told me was, start asking yourself, how can I be helpful? Because if self is the problem, then selflessness, being helpful to others in service, is my solution. It's basically doing the opposite of what I would typically do. And so I started going around my day asking myself, well, how can I be helpful? How can I be helpful? How can I be helpful? All day long. And because my mind is really what was the problem, I needed a place to properly direct my thinking, because my thinking was going to kill me. And so that was a great place for me to start. And I remember being, you know, at work at the time. I was working in a company, for a company. And I just thought, okay, I'm going to write, you know, this inspirational email to all of my clients. And, you know, I didn't expect anything in return. It was truly an act of selfless giving to them. And I was going to see what happens. You know, our book says, are you willing to set aside your prejudices and give this a try and experience the results for yourself? And I was like, yeah, I'm willing to set this aside, like set aside my thoughts and give this a real go. And as I sent that email, someone from my work just popped by and she asked me how I was doing and how my day was going. And I guess she glanced and she saw, like, you know, that I was writing this email. And a week later, I was nominated as rock star in my company. They plastered my face against the wall and, you know, gave me like a little, whatever, like a little token of acknowledgement or whatever. And that was one of the first miracles that I experienced, you know, in surrendering my will and following the instructions of a sponsor and, you know, the steps. Another thing that really helped me was something that I didn't learn in the rooms of CODA, but I learned as, you know, the undiluted message was, half measures avail me nothing. Half measures avail me nothing. And when I was, you know, previously working, I was kind of like taking my time, taking it easy, easy does it. But my sponsor told me, you know, if you half-ass this, if you do this 50%, even if you do this 90%, you get nothing. And that really woke me up. And I was like, okay, like I got to go in this full throttle. And of course I didn't work the program perfectly, but I was in it 100%. And that's why, you know, we say in our program, we don't stop people from suffering, because it's literally the fact that I was at such a bottom that I knew I was hopeless and doomed was what led me to go to this radical solution wholeheartedly and full force. And, you know, bottoms are important. This program can help everybody, but not everybody's willing to do the radical things, the intense things that it asks us to do. You know, making direct amends to people that we have harmed. There's a lot of courage and willingness required for those steps. And unless, you know, I knew that this was my last hope. So, yeah, so working this 100%, I remember going through step four and reading, you know, we vigorously commenced this way of living. We vigorously engaged in action. And that was another thing that my sponsor told me was, focus on action. This is a program of action. It's not a program of thinking, understanding, intellectualizing, rationalizing. And as a thinker, that's exactly what my mind loves to do. It loves to figure things out. And I think that the more I figure things out, oh, I'll figure out my problem on my own, but it never worked. So she told me, you know, quit thinking and focus on action. Do the next right thing. And oftentimes, you know, I'd be so caught up in my internal unmanageability, the obsession of the mind, that I wouldn't know what to do. Like, I was like, tell me what to do. I'm codependent. Tell me what to do. Take care of me. And she just kept directing me to God. What's the most helpful thing for you to do? What's loving, helpful, tolerant, and unselfish and pure? And so I was like, okay, you know, what's the next right action? And 100% of the time, it's something super simple. It's like brush your teeth, you know, it's clean your kitchen, it's make your bed. So it's like, you know, I'd be up in here, crazy, crazy mind, insane. And, you know, thank God I have a set of instructions, which is don't think, you know, do the next right thing. And I would ask God, well, God, like, what's the next right thing? And if I came to God in the right spirit and with the right attitude, which is the attitude of honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness, then the answer would always come. The next right action would always come. God was always there. And it was in following through that simple action of, okay, you know, God wants me to brush my teeth right now, even though I feel like I need to solve the problems of the world. And I feel like whatever, I'm going to go brush my teeth. And so I would do that and I felt a little bit better. And then I finished brushing my teeth and okay, I'd be like, okay, God, you know, okay, I did that. Like, what do you want me to do next? And he would say, clean your kitchen. So God was directing, God was parenting me. He was telling me how to live, how to care for myself in a sane way. You know, I learned that there is a right way to live in this world. And if I just follow that guidance of my God, then I could live and not just live, I could live happy, joyous, and free. And like I said, that's been my experience. So focusing on action was really big. Prayer, you know, prayer time with God and in the evening is just, it's so essential. So this is a spiritual program. And that means my whole solution needs to be about getting rid of self, making Sarah small, and allowing God to come in and rule my life. Step three, made a decision to turn my will over to God. I don't know how much time I have left. So please just give me like a warning.
About 3 to 5 more minutes and then we'll move on to the next.
Okay. So, yeah. So, you know, making that decision and spending that morning time with God, that has evolved so much for me over the years. It's been 2.5 years since I started working. The big book in my life has changed, you know, and at first I just, I would open up to step 11 upon awakening. You know, we reviewed our day, we asked God to remove our self-pity, our self-seeking and our dishonesty and ask God to shape our motives. You know, I can't remember the exact wording, but I would read that every single morning and write out the actions that God wanted me to do. And regardless of what my feelings told me or what my mind told me, I would follow those actions because even my feelings, and this is controversial, but even my feelings were part of my addiction. And I heard a lot in therapy, you know, follow your feelings. If you feel sad, like be sad. But a lot of the times my feelings would misdirect me. And so, you know, the cool thing was, is the big book told me that spiritual principles would solve all of my problems. My only job was to live according to spiritual principles. Example, love, tolerance, selflessness, service, honesty, you know, generosity, non-judgmental, humility. These are the principles by which I have to live daily, regardless of what my feelings or my thoughts tell me. And that's, you know, that's what got me better. I could go on. I mean, there's always more to share, but I think for now, I'll leave it there.
Awesome. Thank you, Sarah. That was really good. I got, and I'm going to jump into this with one or two questions that I've written down here. But before we get to that, I just want to remind everybody that's in the live audience, if you have questions for Sarah, please type them in the Q&A link at the bottom of your screen. And before we move into these questions, Sarah, if you wouldn't mind taking about, I don't know, 60 seconds or so and sharing about CODA and how one might try to figure out if that is a fellowship that would be right for them.
Yeah, absolutely. So I would recommend going to the CODA website. They've got some great resources for newcomers. Like I shared earlier, there's a great resource called Patterns and Characteristics. Another resource I'm going to share is our Monday meeting at 8 p.m. Eastern time for women only. We have a website now, which is super awesome. It's codatoronto.org. Can I post that in the chat, Justin?
I'll go ahead and post it in right now.
Perfect. So codatoronto.org. There's a little section there that says, am I a codependent? And you can find those patterns and characteristics there as well. And I would also recommend checking out meetings. So women who think they might have an issue with codependency are welcome to join us on Monday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern time. I'm sure we can get the link out to you somehow. It's on the codatoronto.org website. And and come out and then get a sponsor. That's what I would recommend.
Awesome. Thanks, Sarah. Appreciate that. And that's a great resource. I know that My first question is actually going to build on this because, you know, I've heard this from many as I've been in the rooms and talked to many recovering addicts of all sorts. And I'm beginning to think this is true, that codependency may be the core of all addictions. You know, whether the higher power that I put on someone else or another substance or another behavior, I become codependent on that because of this. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, it's interesting because I'm also a member of another program, the Money Program. And I've seen people from codependency go to that program as well and share that money is like the root addiction for them. So I think it depends on the person. For me, codependency, dependency on people is 100% my root. It's the root of all of my other addictions. But to be honest, for other people, it is other things. I've met people who don't identify as codependent. And so for them, you know, dependence on people isn't the root of their issues. So from my experience, I think it really does depend.
Does it codepend? Awesome. No, I like that. And obviously we don't want to take others' inventories, but as I look deeper into my own addiction, I think that codependency is right there at the core. A lot of the things that you shared at the beginning, you know, I feel like I didn't fit in. Everybody else looked like they had it all together. And I tried to look like I had it all together on the outside, but on the inside I was a mess.
Yeah.
And I was so dependent on my behaviors that it just messed things up. What are your, as a member of CODA, are boundaries something that you look a lot into? Is that something that's really important to you?
Yeah, you know, I definitely think that codependents could use boundaries. The big book doesn't talk about boundaries. And so when I'm going through the big book, I don't use that word that often. However, you know, my sponsees will ask me like, oh, like, should I set a boundary? And I'll say, yeah. Basically, a lot of times with codependence, we resent other people because of responsibility I failed to take. And so I'm mad at you because you came home, like you're coming home late all the time and you're not telling me. And I want to blame you for my anger. Well, what's required there is responsibility of self. And I can take responsibility by setting a boundary. So a boundary is a tool by which I can exercise and apply my spiritual principles so that I don't have to be resentful at another person for their behavior. I can acknowledge that I'm totally powerless, not just over my codependent behaviors, but actually in step one of CODA, we say we are powerless over others. And so how another person behaves, you know, I have absolutely no control over it. But, you know, if my emotions are dependent on what you're doing, then I'm screwed because, yeah, I'm screwed because I'm going to be mad, whatever. So boundaries help keep myself responsible and safe so that I can stay emotionally stable and sober.
Can I dig there for just a minute about the example you put out there? And this is, you know, it's general, but you said, hey, you know, because you come home late all the time and don't let me know you're coming home late, I may need to set a boundary. What would a healthy boundary in that situation look like in your eyes?
Well, yeah, I mean, it depends on the situation. So let's say my hypothetical partner was coming home from work late, like every day. And he said, oh, I'll be home at 5, but he's coming home at like 9 every day. And so a boundary might be like, because you come home late, we're all waiting for you. We're all sitting here waiting for you. Well, a boundary might be, okay, well, I can't trust what you say. Clearly, like, you know, I can't trust that. You've proven to me that you say you'll come home at this time, but you don't. So I'm no longer going to expect you to come home when you say you will. So that's boundary number one, releasing expectations. And number two is I'm not going to wait for you. So if there's something that I need to do, I'm going to do it without you. And if you don't like it or you get mad at me, that's on you. And I'm not going to assume responsibility for you, you know, being angry. And I'm not going to let you guilt me into doing what I needed to do because you failed to keep your word.
No, I like that. And I like how you avoided or verbalized that. And I think you did that in a way that was not this next thing. And I don't know why, but I need to stick on these boundaries here for a second. And I apologize for that. It's kind of going in a little different direction. But sometimes a boundary, when it's set, at least in my experience, can be like an electric fence, like violent, back off. You've just crossed this boundary and you are now shunned into timeout forever. How do you make a boundary so it's not this violent electric fence?
Well, that's a really great question. And I'll speak for myself. I really struggled with that at the beginning because when I realized that I have rights and I don't, you know, I can set boundaries. I don't have to go along with, you know, what other people are doing if it doesn't feel good to me or it's not God's will for me. I was super aggressive initially setting boundaries, you know, being really harsh. And that's not good either because there I'm just like totally pushing the other person away and I'm elevating myself to like this place of self-righteousness and pride, like whatever, this is my boundary. So it's really important, you know, how we communicate, you know, to communicate gently and lovingly. And you know, my sponsor says like, I don't use you statements. I don't need to put down the other person, but I can frame it so, you know, when you don't come home when you say you will, it really affects me in a negative way. And so, you know, if that does happen again, I'm just going to continue with what I need to do tonight and I won't be able to wait for you. So I think it really comes down to how it's communicated. And also done from a place of love, because I also don't want to enable bad behavior, you know, because if someone is giving me their word, but then not, you know, keeping it and I let it slide and don't really, set a boundary, if you will, I'm kind of just saying, well, that's fine for you to do that. And I'm enabling that behavior.
Thank you so much. Unless there's anything else on boundaries that you're thinking, hey, we should hit on this too while we're here, I think we can move on to the next thing. All right. Very good. So you talked about how you kind of grew up in a very Pollyanna type world. You know, everything, it looked great on the outside. Everything was good, you know. And I'm curious as to know what your relationship with a higher power looked like during that growing up period. What was your relationship with God at that point? And then I'll do a follow-up after that.
Thank you for that question. So I actually grew up an atheist most of my life. Because I grew up in a family of doctors, PhDs, education, intellectual achievement was held to like the highest standard. And so, you know, I was sent to private schools and then I went to some of the best educational schools out there. And in those places, believing in God was never discussed. And I, you know, I studied philosophy. And if you believed in God while you were a philosophy student, you were somehow like defective and flawed. So I grew up not knowing God. However, you know, looking back at my experience, I can see that God was always there. And my awakening happened actually before I entered the rooms. I wasn't looking for God, but I was just desperate and miserable. But then also started to awaken to some truths about my reality. And that kind of unleashed a series of events whereby I met God, and my life was forever changed. And then I found the rooms and got to deepen that. But yeah.
That is super interesting. And my follow-up question is, what does your relationship look like with God today? Is there a spiritual, maybe a religious life outside of the spiritual life, or how does that look today?
Well, it's changed a lot over the years, especially like 2.5 years ago when I was at my bottom and I was just starting to get back into the big book. I hated God. I didn't trust in God. I was like, God has abandoned me and failed me. And so when my sponsor got me back, you know, into the program and told me that God's my only solution, I was like, okay, well, I can't accept that right now. Like, I don't even want to hear that word. And so my higher power started off at that point. The only thing that I could use was, well, you know, there were good things that happened in my life that were not of my doing. So I just use whatever made those good things in my life happened. That's my higher power for right now. And that worked. And then it slowly evolved. And now, you know, it's completely changed. And I'm 100% in a religion. I practice Christianity. I read my Bible every single day, which has deepened my faith. And our book does say seek where religious people are right. And you know, I'm part of a church. I do prayer groups outside of programs. So there's a lot, in my spiritual life now that I have that wasn't there before. And in fact, I'm actually, you know, going to school to become a chaplain. So it's like God has just, when I sincerely gave my life to God and he did the rest. So, yeah.
That is so cool. That's such a, and that's not the same path that everybody has, but what a cool path that you've been led on here. And the path ahead, it's still, you know, your feet are on the ground, you're still standing still, but the path ahead is there, and you'll walk it blindly with a little bit of light, hopefully. But what a beautiful thing. I love that. I just want a quick reminder to our listening audience again. I just have one more question here. If anybody else has a question before we close this up, please type it in the Q&A. Oh, actually, I have two more questions, but we'll see if we get to both of them. We'll see. First one is, Sarah, what is the step that you live in today? Which of the 12 steps is your favorite that you live in?
Hands down, my favorite step is step 3, where I make a decision to turn my will and my life over to God, because in my opinion, step 3 is the solution. That is the solution. The only thing that I need to do to live happy, joyous, and free is to give my will, which is my thoughts, and my life, which is my actions, over to a higher power. And it's the rest of the steps that allow me to carry out the decision that I make in step 3. So step 3 for me is my favorite step. It's one that I practice and strive to practice every day. And I use all the other steps to allow me to live in God's will.
That's a beautiful way to put it. Thank you. Thank you. And I think I am going to ask this last one here. You mentioned, and I'm trying, I just wrote down a phrase as you were talking. Oh, I remember. Okay. So I have worked with a lot of sponsees and others who are not my direct sponsees, just people that, you know, may reach out and ask for advice or whatever. And I hear this all the time. They say, I just got to figure this out. I got to figure this out. And that's what I wrote down. I got to figure this out. And I think that was related to something that you shared, that you're like, that's how I got myself into this mess. So walk us through that a little bit. When I hear the words in my mind, I got to figure this out. And my red flag word is, I got this. Anytime I start saying, I got this, I know I'm going to fall on my face. So when you hear the phrase, I got to figure this out, what do you do immediately?
Well, I know for me, so my addiction, there's a liar in my head. So my addiction is in the mind, and my mind lies to me, and it perpetuates, you know, me believing those lies is what perpetuates the cycle of my addiction of going to people or going to my own intellect to figure things out. And so, saying I need to figure it out is just another lie that my mind feeds me. you know, it's another form of self-reliance. And so what do I have to do is I need to go back to step one and remember that self-reliance fails me. My own mind fails me. My own mind is the problem. So no, me trying to figure it out is not going to get me anywhere. It's going to get me in circles, which will drive me to insanity. That's a really dangerous place for me to even go. And so anytime that comes to my mind or in my sponsee's mind, you know, I just say, just get into action, you know, just get to God. What is the next right thing? Don't try and figure it out right now. You know, it's like, I just remind them, you don't need to have all the answers. You don't need to figure it out. You just need to do the next right thing. And then the next, and then the next. And then by the time you know it, you feel sane and calm, and there's nothing to figure out anymore. So that's what I would say to that.
Awesome. All right. So before we close up, do you have any closing words of wisdom that you'd like to share with us?
Closing words of wisdom. Keep an open mind. Actually, it was one of the things that I wanted to share is humility is an essential part of recovery. And the second that, like you said, Justin, I think that I am good. What is that? That's pride. So the second that I slip into pride, self-reliance, red flag, I'm in danger. And so what I would just share with everyone is stay humble, clean, trust God, clean house, and help others.
Great words of wisdom. Love it. Okay. Thanks again, Sarah. That was a great RICO 12 weekly speaker meeting for all addicts and those wanting to learn more about addiction and the recovery therefrom. If we didn't get to your question, or if you have other questions, please go to www.rico12.com/forum and join in our community and ask those questions and answer others' questions that will come up. I invite the audience to come back again next week. If you're feeling a nudging to make a small contribution to RICO 12, please do so now in the links in the chat or through the website, rico12.com/support. If you've not yet gone to the website and submitted your email address to get on the invitation list for future episodes, you can join us live. Please do so there. And then you can join us live each Friday at noon Central Time. Now, to close us off, Sarah would like us to do the prayer of St. Francis, and she's offered to be voice in that. So please join us in that. Sarah, go ahead.
I would actually like to take, do we have 30 seconds to do 30 seconds of silence for?
Absolutely.
Of 9/11. It is 9/11 today. And I think we should take, if we have a minute, I think we should take a minute of silence actually. And then I'll lead us out in the St. Francis prayer.
We have a minute, so let's do it.
Lord, make me an instrument of your peace. Where there is hatred, let me sow love. Where there is injury, pardon. Where there is error, the truth. Where there is doubt, the faith. Where there is despair, hope. Where there is darkness, light. And where there is sadness, joy. O Divine Master, grant that I may not so much seek to be consoled as to console, to be understood as to understand, to be loved as to love. For it is in the giving that we receive. It is in pardoning that we are pardoned. And it is in dying that we are born to eternal life. Amen.
Amen. Thank you, Sarah. Keep coming back. It works if you work it, so work it. You are worth it.
Thank you. carving out this time, reflecting on the landscape of this life of mine. Peaks too high to conquer, streams too wide to cross, troughs too deep to walk through without incurring loss. Yet here I am, still standing tall, despite the rough terrain. One like me survived the storms and walked through wind and rain. Still standing, I will fight the good fight, still searching